Coming to you from Studio Ice Nine in Earth's capital, San Diego, California, USA. It's the Beatdown Show.
If you don't think it's mess, you got the wrong damn address.
Here is your indomitable host, C. Colton.
We all got to have a place where we come from. This place that we come from is called home. And even though we may love this place on the map, said it ain't where you're from, it's where you're at. Words provided by the great American poet, the mighty Mos Def. Huzzah! Huzzah! Grab some purchase, relax, and treat yourselves, my dirties. For this is another episode of the Almighty Beatdown Show.
That's marvelous.
All right. The voice you heard at the top of the show was that of my friend and associate, J-Dub.
Thank you. Always glad to be here. Second episode.
You better believe it. I am your host, C. Colton, a.k.a. C. Note, a.k.a. Colt 45, a.k.a. Colt Dog, a.k.a. Cornelius Coltniferous III, Esquire. If you're not into the whole brevity thing, that is. You can call me that last one. I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge the man behind the scenes, my executive producer, and extraordinaire engineer, McCoolin.
McCools.
Without him, this show wouldn't be possible.
No, it would just be us talking.
We could do that. We could do that at the bus stop, couldn't we?
Right.
So thank you, McCoolin. Our program is San Diego-centric, and we're going to touch on a variety of topics. Local news, politics, sports, music, culture, and of course, craft beer. Since we know our fair city is the hashtag craft beer capital. Take that, Portland. Take that, Denver. All right. So we speak our minds at the Beatdown Show. We are beholden to no one. We have no sponsors and no agenda. Each episode, we'll also feature an interview with some local luminary, dignitary, or other person of interest. This week on the show, we'll be speaking with local musician and barman, Peter Graves. I'm looking forward to that. He's actually a pretty interesting dude.
Yeah, knows a lot of people, has a crazy life out here locally. It'd be exciting to hear what he has to say.
Absolutely. The show is constantly evolving. There'll be a lot of moving parts. And we like it that way, but we want you to interact with us. So let's hit him with the contact info. What do you say, J-Dub?
You can reach the Beatdown Show via email at beatdownsd@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook or at the official Twitter handle at Beatdown Show. And don't forget to check out our producer's website, McCoolin, at McCoolin.com. McCoolin.com.
Okay, we come bearing information now.
Man, I've got certain information.
I do. Upon navigating the treacherous seas during the maiden voyage of the FV Beatdown Show, which you can find on iTunes, that was our inaugural episode. Thought it went quite well. We weren't sure we'd make it back, but we defied the odds. We smited all foes. We vanquished all challengers, and voila, episode two. All right, so on this episode, like I said, we're going to have an interview. We'll be speaking with Peter Graves, local musician. We're also going to get into the recent sale of the San Diego Union Tribune. We'll have a drought update. After that, we're going to talk about Deco Bike. Not long after that, we will discuss the Chargers Stadium update. We will go into our sports segment where we have some good stuff concerning the Aztecs, the Toreros, the San Diego Padres, and also a new team coming to town. After that, we'll talk a little bit about local music. Got some shows coming up that people really should check out. We will then go to our craft beer segment entitled What You Drinking On? And then we'll have a restaurant bar etiquette segment. And then, of course, our feature presentation, the beatdown list.
Beating them down.
Exactly. So let's get it going. It's about to start time to spit some fire.
More fire, more fire, more fire.
All right. So the Union Tribune was sold recently to the Tribune Company out of Chicago. They also own the Los Angeles Times. It took 6 years, but mega-rich San Diego real estate mogul Papa Doug Manchester, yes, he refers to himself as Papa, sold his pet media project, the Union Tribune Daily Newspaper, and he's going to make a killing off of it. He sold the paper for less than he bought it for, but he kept the land where the Union Tribune building is in Mission Valley, which he will develop into mega high-rises, luxury high-rises in Mission Valley. So that's coming his way. The good news about the switch, Papa Doug is out, and he will take his stupid idea of renaming the paper UT San Diego, which was really a dumb call to begin with. And they've gone back, and you see it on the masthead now when you pick up the paper, they've gone back to the San Diego Union Tribune. So that's fantastic. The bad news is some folks will lose their jobs. That's not really clear yet. There's definitely going to be layoffs as they consolidate the staff. The paper's actually going to be printed in L.A. and then make its way down here in the wee hours of the night to be distributed locally. So, you know, unfortunately, that's the downside of the print media industry. That's the way it's going, though, folks. I don't know what to tell you, but the unknown portion of it is we hope that the San Diego Union Tribune will keep its San Diego flavor and not become the LA Times Southern Edition. There's a certain aspect to holding your identity in this case, J-Dub.
No, I can definitely feel that. You know, I knew the Union Tribune back when it was Sign On San Diego. And I used to go to their website to try and find theater shows locally or just artistic events around town to go check out and see. And then one day I type in the address and it automatically switches and
right.
Sent me to the Union Tribune. So it looks like it's already undergone a mass reorganization before. And you know, and then now it's more dramatic as they're moving a local newspaper out of the local area. You know, it's not that there's going to be a replacement for it, but rather that they're just distributing it from a different location.
Well, I mean, don't get it twisted here. The idea is it's still going to be distributed exactly the way it's distributed. The only difference is it's getting printed in Los Angeles. It's going to have to come down here in trucks in the wee hours of the morning, like I said, for the actual hard copy. They're also kind of going to have to kind of upgrade or overhaul the website, make it a little more user-friendly in this 21st century of technology. As we know, Papa Doug brought in the paywall, 10 articles per month that you could get for free before you had to actually start ponying up some dough to read more.
Is that
so? Unless you were a subscriber, of course.
Huh. I mean, I've been there a few times, maybe caught a couple articles or something. But, you know, my general thing is headlines.
You're a headlines guy?
That's how I read I read the headline, and I figure out what they're going to talk about.
Sure.
And then I know how to bring up general conversation around people.
There you go.
But that's kind of I've never heard of a news website only giving you a certain cap of articles to look at before having to subscribe for the premium edition.
Sure. Well, anyway, that's what's going on with the Union Tribune. Now we've got a drought update on the previous episode of the Beatdown Show. We talked about the Super El Nino and how
the Superboy,
how it could be a panacea for the impending, not the impending, but the current terrible drought we're in, the fourth year of potentially the worst of what is being called the worst drought in California's history since they started recording the data. Well, Here's some news. That's super El Nino. Again, like we said, don't put all your hopes on it. But some scientists are predicting a 35-year mega drought for the entire American Southwest. All things considered, with water rates expecting to soar and real estate development continuing to grow, I think everybody still needs to be pretty vigilant. This isn't going to be anything different than we said on the last program.
Yeah.
Conserve water and do anything you can to do it. The thing that kind of blows me is all this new development and construction. It, you know, these industries use a lot of water. How are they curbing it? How are they being curbed? And are they paying a fair rate to be able to use that water? Those are things we're just going to have to keep an eye on in the future here at the Beatdown Show.
That's definitely true, and I was going to bring it up that a lot of these water conservation regulations that are being put into place only apply to what you would call the general citizen or the lay person. As a matter of fact, I believe the mayor of San Diego said his lawn is here to stay. And that adds on to, I guess the city has launched this whole initiative doing a rebate program where they're paying people like $1.50 per square foot to come and remove their grass lawn for them. And from there, you can find other people that specialize in how to use natural plants to San Diego. Succulents are big ones, you know, less water-intensive.
Sure. Drought-tolerant landscaping, absolutely.
Exactly. So it just the fact that there's inequality between, you know, they're now paying us to lose our lawns while a lot of the big government buildings or some of the other big industries still have their big, beautiful, giant green. There just needs to be better transparency and equality across the board if we're going to take this issue seriously.
Absolutely. Moving in on to the next topic, Deco Bike, folks.
Deco Bike.
Undoubtedly, you've noticed the new bike sharing rental corrals of Deco Bike around town. From their website, it's a citywide bike share partnership with the City of San Diego. Alternative transportation that is green, healthy, and fun.
That's exactly how I imagine they would say it, too.
That's kind of my PR voice for DecoBike.com. So the website boasts over 180 solar-powered docking stations. I've seen them around town. There's quite a few uptown in the North Park area. We'll get into that here in a second. As we know, our Studio Ice 9 is located here in the North Park neighborhood of Earth's capital, San Diego, California.
USA.
USA, absolutely. So they've got 180 of these solar-powered docking stations. Absolutely, that's great. A fleet of 1,700 custom deco bikes. Beach cruisers. That's really what they are. They're not custom fancy bikes.
I was going to say custom low riders. To who?
They're not
chopper
low
bikes.
Yeah, nothing like that. But they are available 24/7. Deco Bike service is twofold. You can do the monthly memberships where you have unlimited run of the bikes as long as you get it to a docking station within 30 minutes or 60 minutes, depending on if you have the regular or the premium memberships. By the way, those memberships are going for $99 for a regular membership or $199.
Great cash, homie.
There we go. Or $199 for the premium. But you, again, if you go over that 30 or 60 minute before getting it back to another docking station around town, then you get charged by the hour. So that's when the clock starts running on that. Interestingly enough, by citywide, of course, they do not mean, and by they I mean Deco Bike. By citywide, they do not mean the poorer neighborhoods. No surprise here. Sorry, City Heights, Paradise Hills, and Encanto. No Deco Bike for you. It's also not in Ocean Beach. My guess is it's a little too mainstream over there. The natives are a bit restless. They might take apart some of the bikes and build some sort of Burning Man project over there. I don't know.
I could totally see that happening.
But for my money, the most glaring omission as far as where they've placed the docking stations has got to be the extremely bikeable neighborhood of Normal Heights. With stations in nearby Hillcrest and North Park, it's actually a damn shame that there's nary a docking station along the scenic Adams Avenue corridor, a stretch which includes University Heights and Kensington, where there are great restaurants, bars, and local shops, all along that corridor.
The entire corridor.
Absolutely. So what I did was I emailed Deco Bike, and it elicited this reply from someone named Tess.
Tess.
All right. I'm going to assume Tess is a female. Bear with me here, folks. I'm going to be using my Tess voice on this one.
Uh-oh.
For the time being, we are focused on the next phase of operation, which is installing Deco Bike stations in the beach areas. Other communities will be considered for future installation once our current project area is complete. In the meantime, you can reach out to your council member or local community planning group, voicing your support for Deco Bike stations in Normal Heights. All of these avenues help to streamline through the approval process with the city and local community groups to approve new locations. That was awful. I can't believe I did that.
No, that was great. If you're standing in front of a room of like 30 students giving a PowerPoint presentation.
I sounded like a tranny. Terrible. Like they hadn't actually started pumping me with estrogen yet. Unbelievable. But I guess my point here is, while I think the service is great, it's pretty similar to that car-to-go service that we have going on.
Yeah, bike-to-go.
It's bike-to-go.
Deco car. It's all the same thing.
It's essentially what it is. And it does prove that San Diego's progressive. It's bicycle-friendly. We're thinking green. All that stuff's great. But come on, Deco Bike. You really whiffed on this one. Normal Heights perhaps will get some docking stations in the future. But in the meantime, if you're going to be riding your Deco Bike through Normal Heights, you better pedal hard and pedal fast down Park Boulevard, get it back into the crest. Otherwise, you're going to be paying extra. So you don't want that.
Well, they're jumping in on the health and fitness trend in America, too. Like, you can rent this bike, but you're going to have to move real fast to get to the next station. So they're giving you a benefit, both fiscally and physically.
There is that. Now, I believe our producer, McCoolin, has an interesting story about Deco Bike. McCoolin, take it away.
Hello, everybody. So I was arrested once, and I got dropped off in the middle of Minneapolis where we had a Deco Bike program going on there. And my cell phone was dead. I had no idea where I was, but luckily these things had maps, give the layout of the city. So I was able to find a friend's house, bike to his house, and get a ride home safely. And I survived that whole ordeal. And I am forever grateful to Deco Bites.
All right, way to
bikes to go.
Bikes to go. Way to bury the lead. First of all, are you at liberty to speak of what your arrest was concerning?
Yeah, I re-entered a baseball game after the end of the game, trying to pick up some ladies.
That's almost too good. Oh, unbelievable! And honestly, you were released from the holding cell.
Yep, I spent about 20 hours in the Hennepin County prison jail.
Unreal, man. You've spent a night in the pokey.
Yep, it was the worst night of my life.
And Deco Bike or Bikes to Go to the rescue.
Saved my day.
Unbelievable. Thank you, McCoolin. We really appreciate that. Terrific story right there on being able to rent some bikes and get yourself out of a sticky situation. One more story here before we go into our next segment. It's time for a Chargers stadium update. And that's your Chargers stadium update.
Great update.
Okay, so we're going to move right along here, and now it's time for sports!
I don't know if it'll make any change, but I figure it's time for me to start playing ball.
I don't care what the scoreboard says. At the end of the game, in my book, we're going to be winners.
You got that right. We are all winners. And the exciting news that has us all jumping up and down in town is on the college front. Recently, San Diego State and USD announced they will lock horns for an outdoor college basketball game, the unofficial city championship, as it's known, at Petco Park. First time ever college basketball game being held at the home of the Padres.
So it's a basketball park.
There you go. In addition, the team signed a 4-year deal to take turns playing each other at their home arenas. So after this game, they will play at Viejas Arena. Then they'll go back over to the Toreros' home, the Jenny Craig Pavilion, and so on. I really salute this news. It's terrific for local college hoops fans, especially nuts like me that are really into college hoops, because it's very diplomatic of the Aztecs to go into the Toreros' Jenny Craig Pavilion, the Slim Jim, as it's known, because there was some question whether or not the Aztecs had gotten too big time for the series. The Aztecs have built their program so huge that they're selling out every game of the 12,000-plus seat arena. And USD has 5,100 in their building, and you know it's crickets in there. So it's great that they're extending the series and being willing to play on either's floor, because again, neither team are in the same league. So it's really a big win for all college basketball fans.
Yeah, it's a big funsies for basketball fans and San Diego natives as it is. You know, the Aztecs have grown to phenomenal popularity, and something like this can help bring some light to the USD side and say, hey, we need to support these people too. They're local just like us. And it just builds kind of morale around the city. And I'm wondering, how does that work, building an outside basketball court in a baseball stadium?
Well, stay tuned, young J-Dub. We'll find out how that works. They have already had a Davis Cup tennis match held inside Petco Park last year. And so they're going to probably follow the model there. But it'll reduce the seating to about 20,000. And I'm told the court is supposed to run roughly from the third base side of the field down into home plate. It's, like I say, a great move. It's going to be a really tough ticket to get. So, big win for both schools.
You know what would really set it off is if they went in and played basketball.
There you go. Yeah, that'd be something. I'll tell you what. I think the season ticket holders would be pretty pleased if that happened. No doubt about it. Maybe they could get Matt Stone and Trey Parker to show up, maybe throw up the first ceremonial jump ball. You never know.
Yeah.
What makes a lot less sense, however, is many months earlier, both schools announced they're going to play each other in football. Not a good idea. USD plays non-scholarship football. The Aztecs are stocked with 85 scholarships. It's a classic David and Goliath. And my concern is that the Toreros are going to come out of that one bruised and battered. You know, San Diego State tried to spin that game like, oh, it's going to be great. We haven't played each other in football, but they play at different levels. It's like the freshman team playing the varsity team in high school. It shouldn't happen.
Oh, it's more of an embarrassment waiting to happen.
It really is. All right, on to the Padres. The Padres can continue to be inconsistent. There's still a few games under 500 as of press time. But I'll tell you what, I'm seeing flashes of hope. Catcher Derek Norris had a recent walk-off home run, grand slam, against the Pittsburgh Pirates, and he has mowed down 16 potential base thieves. And that's a really good sign. There was some talk that he had kind of a noodle arm back there behind the dish. That's not the case at all. The pitching still has to get a lot better for the Padres, and I trust that it will. But Friar Faithful, stay patient, okay? It's not fire Buddy Black time. That's the manager. We don't want to fire him yet. So pump your brakes, okay? I honestly assumed the team would be about five games above 500 right now, but there's more than two-thirds of the season left to play.
And what is the 500? That's how many yards they hit the baseball across the field.
Yeah, they're below that. Can you believe it? Unreal.
Yeah, and I couldn't do it, but they're professionals.
They are. So stay out of their way. We're still going to get you out to a game this year, J-Dub.
We will. I'm learning. I'm working on it.
All right, now here's something I'm really excited about. We got a brand new team coming back to San Diego. It's a little confusing, but hit me. And Yes, you heard it correctly. Hockey will be back in San Diego. The San Diego Gulls, formerly our minor league team for umpteen years, the last team, I believe, folded in 2005, is returning to the Valley View Casino Center. Whatever, it's the sports arena. Every local knows that. And yes, it's still a dump, but it's our dump.
That's right.
In any event, this fall, the Gulls will be back in that dump.
The Gulls.
The San Diego Gulls.
As in, like, they made a goal or, like, seagull?
Gulls.
Oh, Gulls.
G-U-L-L-S.
We're
not calling them the seagulls. They're a bird on the warpath.
Okay. But where did they migrate somewhere for a while, and now they're heading back for the warm weather?
Exactly. They realized that it was time to get back in time for that Super El Nino. Anyway, this fall, the Gulls are back. There's been a whole restructuring of minor league hockey, and they will now be the minor league affiliate of the NHL's Anaheim Ducks. I see what they're working with here. It's like, okay, well, let's stick with the avian theme. We got the Anaheim Ducks. We're going to be the farm club for them, San Diego Gulls. It's a historic name because the Gulls existed here for many years previously. When I was growing up, they were a hot ticket. It was something to do in San Diego. The beauty of it is that's 34 home games, folks. I'm pretty excited about it. I want to see our hometown Gulls light that lamp, put the biscuit in the basket, if you will. These are hockey terms. I know you're a big hockey fan, right?
I know everything there is to know about hockey.
No kidding. Tell me who your favorite team is.
The Nulls.
The Nulls.
Short for Cardinals.
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought. Anyway, folks, season tickets and single game tickets are going to be available soon. Check the Gulls website. It's actually pretty flashy. You can already plunk down some of that long paper.
Great cash, homie.
For some new Gulls gear. They have some pretty sweet looking sweatshirts. And I, for one, will be checking out some of their games. I've been to a few hockey games in my time, and if you ever get to sit on the glass, there's nothing like it. Live hockey is something else. Televised, not quite as good.
I was thinking it might be like baseball, where the live experience just has that energy and just all the force behind it. It really brings you into what you're watching on the field or the rink, whatever you call it.
You're absolutely right. It's definitely better in person. All right, well, now it's time for our guest interview segment. Well, we're going to welcome to the show Peter Graves. He's a local musician, plays in a couple of different bands.
Rock on.
And he's a barman as well. So here we go with our friend Peter Graves. All right, Peter Graves, thank you for joining us on the Beatdown Show. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. This microphone's fantastic.
Isn't it? Well, yes. Nothing but the best for you, my friend. Peter Graves is a local musician, a barman, a Renaissance man, if you will. Let's talk about your band, Roxy Jones, formed in 2007. You are the front man. You do lead vocals and play guitar.
Yes.
Tell us about how Roxy Jones came to be.
Well, we wrote some songs and booked some shows, and then we played them.
Terrific.
And I met Darren in a guitar center. He was a drummer, but he was playing the keyboards, and he was just in the wrong section. He'd gotten lost, and I helped him find the drums section, which was actually worked out much better for him. He got some sticks and I think maybe a cymbal bag.
Tremendous. And this is your drummer.
And a guitar player.
Your current drummer, Darren Lee, right?
Darren Lee, yes.
Okay, so it started out as just the two of you. You met at a guitar center, or, I mean, where were you? The guitar center in San Marcos, or?
Yes.
No worries.
Just cut out all the Guitar Center bullshit.
All right.
Like a Guitar Center ad.
Let's get that out. Let's get that out. No, I just wanted to know where it was. It was local here in San Diego somewhere.
He was in a band called. He's in a few bands before. There was Erotomania, and he was in another band whose name escapes me right now. But we recorded at his. Band member's house. My first band in San Diego recorded at his band member's house, and that was 13 years ago or something like that. And we kind of, I ran into him when he was playing drums in another band, and me and my roommate were like, oh man, this drummer sounds like, you know, he's like, could be playing drums for Sonic Youth or something. They were like a loud sort of indie rock band, but the drumming was like really off and like kind of didn't make sense compared to what anybody else was doing. I thought that was pretty interesting. So
fantastic. Nice.
I chased him and I cornered him in a Guitar Center.
So that's terrific. And then you now, you know, the full complement is there are four members in Roxy Jones. Talk to me about the other two, what instruments they play, who they are.
Well, there's Phil DePesquier. He's the bass player. He joined us about like 6 months after we started playing live shows. I'd known him before that, and I'd asked him a bunch of times to join my band, and then he just kind of gave me the cold shoulder, and then he got dragged out to one of our shows, and immediately after we finished playing, he came up and he's like, you know what you guys really need? You guys, if you guys had some low end in there, it would be really good. I was like, well, I guess we can try it. Yeah.
I mean, but you'd already been trying to court him and he'd kind of given you the cold shoulder.
You know.
And then finally he comes and sees you guys, or maybe he'd seen you a couple times.
I looked really weird back then. Like, and I'm just not big into, you know, hygiene.
Oh, okay. All right.
Hit puberty. That made me tender age of 25 or something.
Exactly. Well, you know, late bloomer. What are you going to do?
Yeah, you know.
And then the fourth member is?
Rose Rock.
Rose Rock.
Yeah. He's our East Coast element, actually.
Okay. He doesn't live locally here.
Doesn't live locally. We send the stuff over to him, and he's like, kind of gives us his opinion on it. And, you know, if he's like, this song sucks, we throw it away. If he's like, this song's all right, like maybe he's like, I could put this part in and it'd be better. And then we do that.
But his contribution is what exactly?
Well,
vocals?
Testosterone, actually.
Testosterone, okay. Yeah.
Without it, we wouldn't have any balls to us, you know?
There we go. I'm listening to and speaking with Peter Graves of Roxy Jones, local band here on the San Diego music scene. You guys do still play shows. You had a recent show at the Black Cat Bar in City Heights.
Yeah.
I've seen you before at different locations around town. How is it that you get your East Coast member to be a part of it, or do you just pick up a session guy when you play local shows?
We just go as a three-piece.
Three-piece, okay.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember that. I must have had a few cocktails at the last local show that I was at. My bad on that one. But you're also in another band. You're also in another band, New Mexico,
yeah,
where you play keyboards. What else do you do for the band New Mexico?
Not much. I mean, I show up to practice and do shows. Sometimes I help them book shows. I kind of like, I'm good at writing emails, I guess you could say. So like I help them with that.
It's an undervalued skill.
It's a moral compass. They were kind of down the wrong path, you know, before I showed up. And then Phil showed up too. Phil plays in that band.
Phil, right?
As well.
Phil, your bass player from Roxy Jones.
So he kind of like, I skewed the moral compass too much one way, and then he kind of brought it back the other, and we're right on track right now.
Well, that's good to know.
I'm excited about that.
You got to find your balance.
Yeah.
Phil plays bass in New Mexico as well?
He plays bass in New Mexico.
I have a bone to pick, and I know the lead singer, Rob, is not here right now of New Mexico.
Okay, yeah.
Again, folks, New Mexico is a local San Diego band formerly known as Apes of Wrath, which I thought was actually a pretty cool name. I'm assuming it's the same band, and they're playing all the old songs.
No. There's, okay. I don't think there's any Apes of Wrath songs. Apes of Wrath was really good, but this is different. Just contains some of the same members.
Okay, so essentially,
I mean, like mostly it was pretty much the same members until me and Phil showed up, and there's been other people that have played in that band and left, and you know, Andrew Montoya kind of has. He's joined us for a while, and he's recording the current stuff, and he also recorded the last album.
Okay.
And, you know, he's kind of like the Rose Rock of New Mexico.
Fantastic.
Except he's like way more in the flesh.
Right, exactly. He's a little bit more present.
Yeah.
Sounds like. That's terrific. Do me a favor real quick. Kind of describe the sound. There's going to be folks listening to this who have never heard of either band, and we want to point them in the right direction to be able to check out some of your stuff. Give me a little bit of a breakdown of how you describe the sound of Roxy Jones, your band, and then also of New Mexico, the other band that you play in.
Roxy Jones is like a seventh grader starting his, you know, first Nirvana cover band and finding a Robert Wyatt record or something. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
That's fucking stupid. let's see. Let's say New Mexico is like always, you know, verse, half a chorus, bridge, verse, full chorus, like that. I'm serious, absolutely dead serious.
That's how you describe it?
I listen, listen carefully.
That's great, but I think half the music people here that may be listening to this have no idea what you just said. So can you break it down in more of a layperson for folks on how New Mexico's sound, how you might describe that for the layperson?
I mean, like in sexual terms? because that's like the next description that came to my head.
If that's the way,
I think I'm going to skip that.
If that's the okay, I thought I was going to say if that was the most accurate way to do it, then
yeah. No,
fire away.
Shit, I don't know. Can you just like play it in the background while we're talking?
I'm sure we can.
You have the technology.
We can do that in post. Okay. My executive producer.
I think there's going to be a lot that we're doing in post.
Probably, but that's all right.
McCool's just called off work tonight. He's going to be working overtime editing this.
Yeah, well, you know, he needs to earn his supper. Okay, so that's the way I look at it. You know, the other thing that I found pretty interesting, are you still involved with booking shows around town, specifically at the 7 Grand Bar in North Park?
I am indeed.
How has that experience been for you, and how did you even score that gig? Because 7 Grand hasn't really been on the scene all that long. Yeah. I think just short of 2 years or maybe just short of 3.
Well, if I told you, then everybody'd be doing it.
That's a good point.
No, I mean, I my friend Dom worked there when they first opened. I went in there and I noticed they had a stage and I was like, Dom, what the hell's going on with the stage in there? And he's like, you should totally come book here. You know, and he introduced me to the current GM and he liked what I had to say and hired me. It's been doing it ever since.
Had you had booking experience booking local shows before that?
I did Soda Bar for a long time for maybe like 2 years, 2.5 years, 3 years, something like that.
Right. And Soda Bar, which we mentioned in our inaugural episode, is one of the great local rooms and it's terrific as far as
awesome, yeah.
As I don't know who's booking shows there now, but he or she is doing a great job.
That would be my guy Corey Steer doing that.
Very nice. Well, keep it up, Corey. We definitely gave a shout out, like I said, in our inaugural episode to Soda Bar, and it actually happens to be one of the favorite rooms of City Beats music editor Jeff Terich. So, and I think he lives like around.
I've been pronouncing his last name wrong this whole time that he's been the editor at City Beat.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have it right? I mean, you interviewed him. Like,
I have it right. I double checked before we interviewed him. But he lives over there in City Heights, and so I think that's part of the other reason why it's one of his favorite rooms. But yes,
that place was a game changer when it first opened. You know, it's like from there until now, San Diego, it's kind of like grown tremendously.
Sure,
concerts and shows wise. I think.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up. When I talked to him in the previous podcast, and again, folks, you can find that on iTunes, The Beatdown Show, or check us on, like our page on Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter at Beatdown Show. However, my point here, Peter, is when I asked him about a game changer, and we're talking now, 2015, we talked about the Observatory North Park. I'm sure you have some thoughts about that place. You're a North Park resident as well as being all these amazing other things. That's been a real game changer. What are your kind of thoughts on what that's added to the landscape?
It's fucking awesome. It's like, you know, I live across the street and the, you know, amount of really large, high quality shows that are coming to San Diego now is so much to do with like that venue being in the right place, sort of in the right people's hands initially. Like when it first I guess it was still called North Park Theater.
Yep.
When Tim Mays started doing shows there, but I think him and the owners of West Coast are responsible for the idea of kind of giving it a really more of a venue feeling than a theater feeling, tearing out all the seats. And, you know, he started booking some really good shows there. I know they were booking shows before, but more one-off here and there. And then I guess, I don't know how long Observatory in Santa Ana had their eye on it, but then they brought it down, and that just brought all sorts of more acts that are hopefully having a good time in San Diego. And I'm having a good time seeing some of the shows. You know, as a bartender locally, you know, you get to deal with all the, you know, drunk people after a UB40 concert or something. It's great. You know, serve them there.
I love it. You know, and in full disclosure, I went and saw the Far Side. One thing that I've really appreciated about the Observatory North Park is, aside from just the volume of shows and all the cool acts that are coming through, I feel like now San Diego's on the map for the hip hop scene as well. And you're getting a lot of legends coming through, like E40,
some of those Far Side. Like, the way, like, with, I think, the larger hip hop shows is just like, it's kind of like, I may be talking a little bit out of my ass, but the shows that I've tended to see at like 4th and B over the years, I think, was doing a lot of hip hop shows.
They were
closed down. A lot of them end up at Porter's Pub up on UCSD. And, you know, neither one of those places to me like ever seemed properly promoted or run, like kind of like where this one's like, you know, it seems like everything's on the level to actually make it a successful thing, and they, you know, can't argue with the location they got to. So I think that's why you're seeing more and more of it. But there was those like bigger hip hop shows. You just never heard about them because you know.
Right. Right. Exactly. They kind of got washed over, and you know, I think sometimes San Diego has in the past gotten passed over between the LA or perhaps Orange County's Observatory, and then bands or acts, especially on the hip hop scene, then skipping and going straight to Phoenix or elsewhere, the Bay Area, on their way somewhere else. Now San Diego's kind of nailing down those shows, and I think it's tremendous. I'm gonna pose the same question to you that I did to Jeff from City Beat. Do you think that the Observatory is siphoning business away from the House of Blues downtown?
I hope so. I don't know.
Or other venues.
Like, absolutely. Yeah. But I think that's a good thing.
Sure. Right. No, it's definitely not. It doesn't seem like a bad thing unless you.
Just so much rather see any,
unless you book
show.
The House of Blues.
Yeah. Well, you know. Sorry.
Yeah. Right. Well,
that's maybe mean spirited. You know.
That's okay. You're speaking your mind.
I don't know them. I'm sure they do a good job. My preferred place is to see shows across the street. You know.
Rather than go
can
all
we see it out your window, actually? Is that a full disclosure? Like, there's the North Park Theater right there.
Wouldn't that be great if it was an outdoor? If it wasn't like an outdoor venue, you could just catch it from your veranda.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, we're speaking here with Peter Graves, local musician. He's also a local barman. He tends bar in one of the local gin mills around here. How's your experience as a musician and also working in a bar kind of commingled over the years?
I don't know. It's a great place to work because you can get your shifts covered to play shows, but then it's, you know, then your coworkers can't go see you play. So
that's the hard part of it.
Yeah, that's about it. I mean, music and alcohol, I guess, sometimes go really well together. So it's, you know, fits two of my lifestyle choices very well. On the right path there.
That's well, absolutely. I mean, they go hand in hand. Now, I guess what I'm wondering, this is something as somebody who's not a musician, never played in a local band, I see so many great local bands that are doing it. You know, the big time isn't quite necessarily maybe what they're shooting for, but most of the folks in the local music scene have to hold down some kind of other line of work, some other kind of employment. And you're no exception. You're kind of a fella who works as hard as you can, whether you're working at the bar or booking shows, to be able to play shows with your own creative experiment. Can you speak for like a lot of local bands in the scene on what it's like to kind of really produce your art and be creative, and then still have to go to your not 9 to 5, but you know, your place of employment to make it all happen?
I mean, some people play video games, and some people play in bands, and some people play basketball, and some people do all three. But everybody's got to work, you know.
Sure.
I've yet to, you know. I guess through the booking thing, it's interesting. And I used to bartend at Soda Bar as well. So it's like, I mean, there's a, you know, a way of looking at it where you're making your living off of music. It's just not in the, you know, way that you've maybe been told to envision as a success, you know.
Absolutely. And it seems like it, from all the folks that I know that play in local bands, it's kind of a lifestyle. It's a way of life. You're going to go play a few shows a month, or however often you can get into the studio, maybe record some material. And the rest of the time, you've got to really just kind of hustle to get your rent paid and that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Every, you know, what is it? Today's the 2nd, the 3rd?
Right. Yeah. We're early here in the month of June.
Yes. Early in the month of June. Like, when's it the last day I can pay that on?
Yeah, exactly. my heart goes out to folks. One thing I've always appreciated about local music is, if somebody's getting out there, and even if they're not amazing.
Thanks.
No, I'm not talking about you, sir. But, you know, even if it's not necessarily something that appeals to me.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not talking about you. It's somebody putting themselves out there. And you can kind of tell when somebody's kind of just going through the motions, or when somebody's playing their heart out. You know, somebody's pounding the skins and their shirt's flying off, or they're losing their drumstick, or somebody's playing the guitar and their string breaks, or they're screaming into the mic, and you can just tell that. I feel like I've gotten to the point in life where I can tell when somebody's mailing it in and when somebody's really giving their all.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, is that obvious to you, even as a musician or as somebody who goes and sees other bands play?
Totally. I mean, and sometimes it's the bands that aren't like super exciting to watch, because maybe they're just like starting out and whatever. I don't know. Like it feels to me that, especially people that just in whatever way, you know, get their art out there, you know, sometimes that takes, you know, a good deal of stuff.
So that one's so eloquent. It's got our executive producer McCoolin cracking up over here. This is really, really dynamite here. I really enjoy speaking with Peter Graves here. I will say, in full disclosure, I have played on a men's recreational basketball team with Pete, and he is quite a gunner. In fact, we have been known to call him Pistol Pete from time to time. Basketball is definitely something that you enjoy when you're not doing all the many things you do, right?
Yeah, watch out. Going to put it in that hoop.
He's going to put it in that hoop, folks. Pete, I'm going to ask you maybe one last question here, and that is the songwriting process. I would imagine you write the songs for Roxy Jones, your band. What goes into that process for you? Don't gum up on me now.
There's not really a lot much of a process. There's, you know, somebody comes up with a riff, and we jam on it for sometimes, you know, a day, and sometimes like 5 years, and then, you know, come up with another part or two, and everybody's like, oh, you think that's cool? And like, you know, then maybe it gets stuck in your head, and then you like kind of come up with the melody, and then, you know, and then you get like, you know, something, you know, something upsets you at work or with a girl or something, and then you like get these like really cheesy lyrics, and then like there's like one of them that's like not that cheesy, and you like take that one and try to write some stuff around it, and then, you know, then you got to record it, and that's a whole nother thing. Then it's done. Then you got a song.
It's quite a process, man. Well, yeah. Whatever works. What can we expect from Roxy Jones coming up this summer and into the fall? Do you have dates that are booked coming up?
Well, we just have a show this month at Bar Pink with Jimmy Rulius, who's amazing. He plays every last Saturday at 7 Grand. That's going to be smoking. We've got some recording stuff in the works that's kind of top secret, outer space NASA type deal, you know.
Okay, we won't go
We have some information that we can't share over the airwaves, bandwidth, or whatever.
Yeah. Yes. So we won't go there. But there, Roxy Jones will have some shows coming up.
I can't help it. We got signed to Columbia.
Oh man, big time!
Yeah, big time!
Wow,
big time!
Drinks on you after the interview.
Well,
let's make it happen.
Maybe need to read a little bit more deeply into that contract I signed before I start buying people drinks.
Oh man, you didn't read it? Unbelievable!
This shit's long, dude.
Hey, I won't go. Next time, maybe bring your filthy attorney with you. Make it happen.
Yes. Well, he can't read, which has actually been sort of a hang up.
That could be a problem.
It's a snag every time we get into like the legal paperwork.
Unbelievable. I wonder how that
every other part of the judicial system though he's really got a firm grip on. It's good. Good stuff.
Well, that's good to know. Any New Mexico shows coming up? I know that you're just a member of that, but I would imagine they're gigging soon.
We're gonna play a special showcase with Gilbert Castellanos and Robert Dove during Gilbert Castellanos' Wednesday night jazz jam over at 7 Grand. So that's going to be New Mexico with a horn section.
How soon is that happening?
With a world-famous horn section.
World-famous, yes.
We're talking, you know. That is on the 24th of
June.
This month.
Okay, terrific.
And then on the 26th, we'll be playing with the Wild Wild Wets and Soft Lions and a touring band by the name of Max Payne and the Groovies.
Okay.
Did I say Wild Wild Wets too?
You did. You mentioned those
guys.
I am very familiar with the Wild
Wets. The 26th at Soda Bar. So you got
June 26th, Soda
Wednesday,
Bar.
7 Grand, New Mexico. Thursday, Bart Pink, Roxy Jones. Friday, New Mexico, and Wild Wild Wets over at Soda
All
Bar.
That same
yeah,
week.
All that same
oh,
week.
Oh, man. You are.
A lot of practicing. You know, I played another band too.
You know what? That was not in my notes.
So we cut the pre-interview a little early, I guess.
You know? I apologize, folks. Yes. What is the third band?
Bruin. So that's.
You're playing
Dom
in Bruin.
Dom Fawcett's band. Yeah, I just guessed with them. We got some stuff going on.
Oh, terrific!
Yeah, we're playing with Motopony on June 15th at Casbah. So.
Well, it sounds like Peter Graves.
Yeah, I'm late to practice right now. Is what's going on.
Well, we better cut this short. Let's not lie. His performance schedule is stacked to the gills. I'll have more information on the Beatdown Show's social media outlets. But Peter Graves, thanks again, man. It's been real.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Music!
You're listening to The Beatdown Show, featuring the insuperable C. Colton. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back to The Beatdown Show. That song you're hearing right now, it's one of my favorite local bands. It's The Burning of Rome with the song The Ballad of an Onion Sprout.
Amazing band.
They really are. You got to check them out. They're delightfully weird, and their live shows are off the hook. They definitely don't disappoint. So we'll go into a little bit of a local music segment right now. The Burning of Rome actually have a show coming up June 19th at the Casbah. I have a feeling that one's going to sell out.
Oh, I believe it.
It's a Friday. I believe that's a Friday night show. June 19th. Anyway, whatever. Check the Casbah website. That's going to be a really good one. Again, it's a great room. They are going to tear the roof off the sucker.
You know, I stumbled upon these guys at an art fair on Adams Avenue, incidentally, 2012. And they were just playing outside on stage with a few other bands, asking for some tips or a donation for their album. But since then, I've really watched them blow up on the radar. It's been fantastic, and I hope I can get out and see the show.
Definitely, yeah, that's one that I definitely hope that I can make as well. I also wanted to give a little heads up for another tremendous show that it's going to be happening very soon. Actually, June 25th at the Arenic in North Park. And it's a band, the local rockers, that are known as the Donkeys.
The Donkeys.
I know the Donkeys are big time when my friends in other cities are telling me to go check them out. And honestly, I have not been to any of their shows.
Oh.
I've heard some of their jams. They're definitely on the more mellow side, and you can't really compare what they do to the Burning of Rome, but they're definitely worth seeing, and check it out, folks. Like I said, Burning of Rome, June 19th at the Casbah. Donkeys will be playing at the Arenic in North Park on June 25th. So you definitely don't want to miss that. All right, now for one of our favorite segments on the show. It's a little something we like to call
What You Drinking On?
And I want to be a beer truck driver. I want to see all the beer insider. Take me back to its destination. I want to be a beer truck driving sensation. Driving sensation. Oh, yeah.
So all right, gang. As we know, San Diego, hashtag craft beer capital. And this week, here's what I'm drinking on, J-Dub.
What is that?
Pizza Port Brewing's Swami's IPA.
Ooh, I like that one.
6.8% ABV. Wow, can I see?
6.8% IPA.
6.8% IPA. Well, that's not actually not inaccurate, but... it's terrific. It's hoppy. It's an IPA in the West Coast style, which means citrus and pine flavors.
And you're automatically smarter if you drink Swami's, you know, because a Swami is a soothsayer, a wise man. So it really just imparts higher wisdom into you.
You hear that, kids? Before finals, pound a few Swami's IPAs.
That's the message here.
Guaranteed to pass class. It is also, the thing I love about it, it's the first IPA that was ever brewed at the original Solana Beach Pizza Port location. I used to go there as a kid. I wasn't obviously checking it out back then, but literally they've been brewing it there for over 20 years. And let's not lie, it comes in that good looking 16 ounce can that depicts the famed Cardiff surf break, which is really one of the most epic in San Diego County.
Oh, most definitely.
So I really, really enjoy that one. J-Dub, what you drinking on?
Well, since we're talking about local craft beers, I'm drinking on this one right here. It's called Dawn of the Red from the Ninkasi Brewing Company.
Now, wait a minute. That's not local. I believe that comes from our good friends to the north in Oregon.
No, no, no. I had it here just the other day, so it's definitely
local. Oh, that makes it a local beer. Very good.
But no, it's the Ninkasi Dawn of the Red. It's an Indian red ale. Imagine that. You know, it's so great. It's a super drinkable, hoppy beer with a touch of caramel melt. You know, the beer has the bitterness and drinkability of an India pale ale, but with flavors of mango, papaya, and pineapple. It's actually a great one to really get you into the summer vibe. You could have a couple of those with a good meal, not too heavy, and you'll just be relaxed and chilled out.
So definitely check those out, folks. The Pizza Port Swami's IPA and...
Ninkasi Dawn of the Red.
Tremendous. Oh, and there's one thing we have to remind all of our listeners, and that is this.
The Beatdown Show recommends that you respect the craft. Please drink responsibly.
All right. Fantastic. And that always helps us lead into our restaurant bar etiquette segment. Okay, we're not going to spend too much time on this one, but I did notice in San Diego's intrepid alt-weekly newspaper / magazine, San Diego City Beat, the cover story and lead article was about should we abolish tipping in this country as
that
we know it.
Controversial issue right there.
It's definitely controversial. Essentially... tipping would be replaced by some sort of a service charge in order to better equate the salaries between the front of the house and the back of the house. Again, for those uninformed or if you've never worked in the industry, front of the house would, of course, be servers, hosts, bartenders, runners, and back of the house, we're talking about the cooks.
Cooks, the prep guys, dishwashers, and anyone who's in the back of the house. Absolutely. And the house being the restaurant in this case.
Sometimes also known as the heart of the house.
The heart. Yeah, I just came across that term like a month ago.
Yeah, it's just really just how you want to describe it. Splitting hairs. But I will say this, both myself and J-Dub work in the food service industry.
Yeah, yeah.
We feel that we have a pretty good point of view on this. We're not telling what people to do. we're simply debating this. Now, for I know this, in the article, Jay Porter, a former restaurateur here in San Diego, had two different restaurants, the Linkery in North Park and the L Take It Easy, just up the street in North Park. And the L Take It Easy was a standard restaurant like you'd have anywhere else. Tipping was just up to you. 15%, 18%, 20%, whatever you felt was necessary.
5 or 30.
Hey, it's always across the board. And again, I'm never going to be one to tell people what they should tip. But his other restaurant, the Linkery, definitely went the other way. He tacked on an 18% service charge on all tickets. And that way, he was able to pay the back of the house commensurate with what the servers were making. And the interesting thing that Jay Porter found was that there was less infighting between the front and the back of the house at the Linkery, where he had this service charge. People performed better. There were fewer problems. Meanwhile, it was the same old up at the L Take It Easy. And it's an interesting concept. It really enlightened me when I heard what Jay Porter was doing. I ate at the Linkery a couple of times, and when the bill would come, it was like, okay, what are we going to say? Oh, there it is, the 18% service charge. It's already there.
All right, no thinking on my part.
Now, this was for any party, you know, a party of two. I only ate there as a party of two. I'm not talking about the six or more, you get the autograt on there.
Right, right.
I'm talking about every tab, 18%. And I thought it was a pretty radical idea. Honestly, if it would help kind of everyone in the house to make more of a living wage, then I'm for it.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that sounds good both ways. I guess one of the main issue I have with that, when you're looking at essentially a redistribution of the income of the restaurant on an equal level, is the fact that not everyone pulls their own weight, or even pulls a significant amount of weight, or has, you know, some people have higher work performance, some people have less work performance. So essentially saying that those who maybe just got into the job and are getting by are going to be equally compensated with those who inherently bust their arses.
Sure.
You know, for the tips that they would be receiving.
Sure, and that's the age-old argument. It's presented in the article. Hey, the standard tipping system is an incentive to give excellent service. Well, that's fine. And I think we all know when we've gotten excellent service and when it's been okay and when it's been not very good.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, this deserves further discussion. But I know that restaurants in places like New York and Chicago and other real foodie restaurant big time towns are experimenting with this, and I definitely think there's more data that needs to be collected before we completely abolish it. But I'll tell you what, to break it down in like a real easy way, if you can make $18 to $20 an hour as a server and then and the same as a cook in a pretty busy restaurant, and that's under the same roof, I think that's equality right there, and I don't see how you could get much better than that. And that is kind of what the article is suggesting.
Yeah, like I said at the beginning, I'm torn between both ideas. I'm definitely open to seeing some experimentation, and then, you know, perhaps even trying it out if that's what it becomes, and see how I feel about it. It's one of those things I won't know until it's there firsthand, or for me to hear immediate stories from people.
No doubt. Well, now we've reached our signature feature of the program. That's right. It's our namesake. And it's a little something we like to call
the Beatdown List.
All right, on our first program, we only had two things on our first Beatdown List: the city of Los Angeles and pet owners who don't pick up after their dogs.
Ugh.
So to stay in that same vein, here we go. Number one on our Beatdown List. Orange County.
The OC.
Let me tell ya, there are extravagant neighbors directly to the north. You know, nothing seems more fake, more cookie cutter, more commercially spawned than most of the OC. Have you ever been to the Irvine Rectum? Spectrum Mall? Just smells of capitalism. And anyway, the OC is an area which is mostly suburban, it's concrete, and super pretentious. It's got the LA traffic without any of the culture, and it boasts gems like, well, what's been its real contribution to society? The Real Housewives of OC, the Hills, the OC on the Fox Network, and a really bad movie starring Jack Black and Tom Hanks' kid, Orange County, which, as far as I could tell, had nothing at all to do with the OC. So hit the bricks, OC, and take that money-grubbing mouse with you. J-Dub, what do you got for us on the beatdown list?
Well, you know, keeping in the same vein as last week, I tell you what, there's this neighbor that I have, and they have this big, big dog with a deep, loud voice. It's like if a lion barked.
My God.
Oh, yeah, no, it's terrible. But the thing is, this dog will start barking 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, and it will go hours. It'll wake me up, and I'm a restaurant worker. I work till late at night sometimes, and it's just the most obnoxious thing. And then it recruits friends. So now there's three or four other dogs barking along with this one.
Sure.
It was just the morning for a while, and now it's bled into the nighttime. It's a big dog. I just imagine it's not being taken out for a walk to expend any energy. I don't know what the deal is. The other day I was fed up, knocked on the door, and these people have closed-circuit television. There's a camera on you.
No kidding.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on in that house, but it drives me absolutely insane. My window faces their house. It comes right into my room. And it's just like nails on a chalkboard or any kind of high-pitched frequency that hurts your head, you know. And I just want to say the beatdown list goes to anyone who allows their dogs to become a noise violation.
Oh, there you go. And finally, I'd like to put Scott Peters. Boy, I popped that P pretty hard. Scott Peters on the beatdown list. He's our congressional representative for the 52nd Congressional District from San Diego. His campaign sends me multiple emails each week to chip in $5 to the campaign for his 2016 reelection. Well, here's the thing. I voted for Scott in 2014. I'll probably vote for him again. But he's flooding me with these emails and begging for $5 every week. It's unbelievable. Like I said, I'm not going to not vote for the guy. I'm all about what he stands for, and he definitely cares about social justice. But I'll tell you what, I don't think I need 15 emails a week, Scott. So maybe it's time to think a little bit bigger. Like, say, maybe your campaign staff can put together a $5,000 a plate fundraising dinner. Maybe try that one. So, Scott, may those email flurries hit the bricks. All right. J-Dub?
The beatdown list segment of this podcast is intended for entertainment purposes only and does not condone or advocate violence in any form. Its larger purpose is to serve cautionary notice for the intended people or entities herein exposed that the informed populace is omnipresent, outraged, and fully operational and will no longer accept any tomfoolery, trickeration, hijinks, absurdity, rope-a-doping, carnival barking, hypocrisy, or insanity in any form or manner. What? So, ever.
That's the disclaimer, folks. Well, I'll tell you what, it's been a heck of a show, episode 2. We're going to wrap it up here now. All right, there's my show close music. All right. Well, real quick, we'll have a let J-Dub remind you how to get in touch with us.
You can reach the Beatdown Show via email at beatdownsd@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook or at the official Twitter handle at Beatdown Show. And don't forget to check out our producer McCoolin's website, McCoolin.com. McCoolin.com.
That's marvelous.
It certainly is marvelous. Some quick thank yous. We want to thank Peter Graves, our guest on the interviews.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank J-Dub for being such a marvelous sidekick.
You're a marvelous host.
Thank you very much. And as always, the man behind the scenes on the ones and twos, that's McCoolin.
McCools! Yeah.
All right, well, like we said, check us out. We're going to keep these coming down the pipe. You can also find us on iTunes. So download it to your device. Heck, get it out there. You're definitely not going to want to miss what we have coming up in future episodes. I end on this note. Always look to the positive and never drop your head. For the water will engulf us if we do not dare to tread. So let's tread water. The immortal words of De La Soul. Namaste.